We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
I'm looking big, man. I'm looking playoffs first year with Herbert. That's the way I look at it.
If you're not good enough, you won't play. The best player is going to play. So that's the mentality.
What are we in here to do? Are we in here to lose? Or are we here to win championships? You got to have that mentality first year, first day.
Man, it's some special things that's going to come. You know, I wish I can put it into words, but, man, some special things are going to come out this week.
Yeah, I want to just master the offense. I want to have, you know, complete control and know everything and be comfortable. I mean, you can't really play free and play really well if you don't know what you're doing. So that's the goal.
Yeah, I am used to, you know, the winner loser identifies the guys that, you know, number one quality we're looking for is competitive spirit, and that's hard right now. But, you know, these guys, once again, are NFL athletes. If you weren't an elite competitor, you're not going to be at this level. So.
I'm truly excited. I know there's a lot of people out there excited for, you know, to see Trevor, but I understand this team is very excited for him and rooting for him, and, you know, we're behind him 110%.
XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Donovan Darius.
And E.T. in the house as well. Good morning, E.T. Let's say hello to you first.
What's
today.
Happening? What's huh? happening?
What's going on with you, man?
You know, it's what it is, light Thursday?
It's Wednesday.
It's jump light Thursday. Day?
It's light Thursday. It's just a day early. We'd be eating breakfast courtesy of D-Rock if it was Thursday. Good morning, Tony Smith. How
good
are
morning.
You?
I'm quite well.
He's
today.
Good. Yeah. Braves are up 1-0. Yeah. It's just going to make it that much more painful when they choke it away.
Uh-huh.
And double
that Braves
D
hate runs deep.
What's
for
going
Mike.
On,
he
gentlemen?
Even went to ET first. I didn't even get the first good morning. It was
no.
like, nope, Braves fan, I'll wait.
At least I
got the shirt on.
At least
morning.
I acknowledge the Braves won the game last night. So there's that. You know, I mean, certainly overshadowed by the Knicks' domination of the Sixers in Madison Square Garden. But that's all right. You know,
yeah.
You got what you got. Double D, how are you? How was
man,
your week?
Man, it was good, man. We was just chilling with the family. You know, had a nice little time. You know, Providence went down, took a little L. You know, it goes back. It doesn't. I always tell you guys, man. It doesn't matter what level of ball they play. It always comes down to the consistency of discipline. You know, and you know when you have it, you win. When you don't, you lose. And so there
That's
you have
simple.
It.
Simple. It's a growing process.
Yes, it
me.
Is. Yes, it is.
You know, and you're a good mentor. You're a good teacher.
Hey, well, I try my best.
What's your patience level? Would you say as a coach instructor in general?
You know, no. It's a good patience level because I understand I have a lot of information I want to teach these kids. So I have to break it down to the simplest terms they understand. So one of the things, when guys make mistakes, one of the first questions I ask them, instead of telling them just what to do, I ask them, what did you do wrong? So once they tell me what they did wrong, now I can fill in the gaps, you know, and then I can give them a little bit extra from there. And so I'm always about trying to build them up, you know, give them chances, you know, mold them, you know, shape them, let them know that they're, you know, it's possible for them and the right techniques and all that stuff. So I'm a patient guy, but after a while, you know, I mean, you know, I give a guy enough chances, you know, then it's time to replace him.
Right. After a while. Right. Like you ever get that? Like, do you struggle with the thing that I would do from time to time, which is that knucklehead factor? Like when you ask that guy repeatedly, do you know what you did wrong? He's like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course. Like, I mean, the matter of fact, last game we had, you know, I had a guy, you know, who gave up several touchdowns just off of technique. He was inside, supposed to be inside man technique. They ran a slant route. I mean, so that means they're running the ball right to you. Mm-hmm. We practice that. You know, we practice 3-step read and then break on the man, then the ball. Then they ran the out and up on him. We always tell you, the guy runs out, run to the man, then look for the ball. He looked straight at the quarterback. Guy turned up, touchdown. So, you know, he had to be replaced.
There you go. You know, technique. You got to listen to your mentor, Tony. When a guy like Donovan Darius is instructing the high school kids,
sure.
I think he probably has a little bit of clout in that department. Double D bye week
yep.
in the book for the Jaguars.
Yep.
And, you know, we talked about it. We had Victory Wednesday last week, but going into the bye, what can you get accomplished? Like, people always talk about, oh, here's what we got to work on during the bye week. There's really not that much more practice that's going on during the bye week. These guys are contractually obligated to have days off. So what can you get accomplished in terms of maybe adding something or refining something in your game during a bye
week? I think you can get a lot accomplished, I think, on different levels. I think from a coaching standpoint, you get a chance to kind of assess where you're at, what's worked, you know, what is your team like as a whole. So the second half of the season, what do you want to do? As you know, what worked, what didn't work. But then as a player, I would take this time, you know, that bye week time to really look at and really assess what worked, what was my strength, and what are my weaknesses, because this is a copycat league. What worked for you, you know what I mean, will continue to work for you. What didn't, where you fail, you know, or where you made mistakes, other teams see that. The eye in the sky, as we call it, the film, that doesn't lie. So that means that other teams see what you did wrong. So I think the bye week, you know, is a great opportunity for you to rest physically. But mentally, I think you can definitely make some strides in your personal game.
A long haul now, too, for this football team, Donovan. Can you remember the Jags had the bye last week, obviously, so now 11 straight weeks they're going to be playing a football game. Can you remember the longest you had to play week to week without a bye week in your career?
I mean, I think probably about 10 games, 8 to 10 games. I mean, it's a long season. I mean, with the addition of the 17th game this year, you know, this year through the collective bargaining agreement, it's going to be a long haul, and that's why it's going to be really important for these guys to take care of their bodies, to know what to do, what not to do on and off the field. You know, every week you're trying to get into the offensive coordinator's head, and then you're trying to forget what you learned and then learn something different. So mentally it can be very exhausting, you know, for you as well. But again, it's the name of the business and everybody has to do it.
The NFL is so tied up in, you know, the TV schedule and when things are done and all that. But from a player standpoint, I mean, you've been a representative for a long time. Would you be in favor of two bye weeks, you know, or is that too much to break up the season? I think the NFL doesn't want to dilute the product that you're going to have so many teams off all throughout the course of the season, but would that be something you'd be in favor of?
No, I mean, I would be in favor of two bye weeks. I wouldn't be in favor of the 17th game. I know that they shortened down the preseason games, for that. But while at the same time, you know, 2 weeks would help. Two weeks would help a guy earlier in the season, you know, probably after, probably like the sixth, seventh game, and then closer to the end of the year. So that way you have that last 3 to 4 game push, you know, towards the playoffs, you know, where your body is really, really banged up. You know, I think everybody on the team is probably going through something, you know, overcoming some type of illness. I mean, that can help as well. But at the same time, just like you mentioned, too, you don't want to elongate a season as well.
How far into your career were you before you figured out like a routine for how to get through a full NFL season? You only get the one bye week. You got to have your body ready week to week. Mm-hmm. It's very different than a college season. Obviously, you're being forced to play a lot more than you were in college. How far into your career were you before you felt like you had a good routine for all that?
I think for me, it was probably year three, but definitely year four. Because again, the first couple years is everything is new. The first year, everything is new. Second year, everything is not new. Third year, now I kind of know what to expect a little bit, the season, the schedule. So I think around year three, year four, and then two, with the addition of veteran players that came on board, you know, with veteran coaches, veteran players that came on board, got a chance to teach me some of the tricks of the trade, like the Carnell Lake, you know, and, you know, guys of that nature.
What would you have, like, if Trevor Lawrence came to you and asked for advice, like how he should spend his bye week or what he should focus on, what would you have told him?
Well, I would have told him to go back to the film, go to the film room, pull up all his plays that he made, all the, you know, the good plays that he made, you know, the long passes, you know what I'm saying, some of the other passes and plays that he's made. And then I would have him look at the turnovers that he's made, and I would have him study those turnovers and see exactly what did he do wrong for that. Because, again, those turnovers, you know, they'll happen over and over and over again if you don't learn the lesson. Whether he were rushed on one pass play, whether he was back on his heels on another pass play, whatever it was, you know, I would have him look at that so that way he knows what he needs to work on when he goes out on the practice field.
Do you think – I mean, he's obviously cut down on his turnovers as the season's gone on. You know, the first three games to the next three games, a big difference there.
Yeah, most definitely.
Is that a case you think he's just trying to see what he could get away with early on in his career? You know, he's got a big arm. He's a gunslinger. Mm-hmm. And he's going to take some chances. And then he realizes, you know – okay, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do. Is that what we're seeing happen right now?
Yeah, most definitely. I think, you know, with him being a first-year guy, everything to him is new. So I always say that, you know, a first-year quarterback has the greatest chance to be successful, you know, and to have failure. But successful from the standpoint that nobody knows what you're doing. So defense coordinators, they can't necessarily fully prepare for you yet because, you know, you haven't been out there yet. But beyond that, what I would also look at, you know, from the standpoint is I would get into the playbook. I would get into to see exactly what it is that I can do. What are those things that are familiar to me, you know, that I can execute at a high level. And I would spend some time with the coaches. You know, I would tell them, spend some time with the coaches so that way they can build that belief within him and he can see exactly what is he successful with so far. So that way it builds that success and the optimism for the team moving forward.
All right, one thing we'll look at here moving forward is the pass-catching assortment that Trevor Lawrence has at his disposal. And the Jaguars Today question of the day is presented by Maserati Jacksonville. And we ask you today in poll form, which of these pass catchers will have the biggest positive impact for the Jaguars in the final 11 games of the season? And I ask it that way because I don't want it to be about strictly who's going to catch the most passes or have the most yards. A positive impact could be, you know, you're the safety valve. You're the guy I come to rely on third down. It could be the guy that puts up the biggest numbers. It could be the guy, in this case, Dan Arnold, who plays a position where you really need that kind of impact coming from. So we gave you the options today in alphabetical order. Jamal Agnew, who's the everyone's new flavor of the day, the week, the month, whatever the case be. And, you know, with good reason, he's playing good football. As Urban Meyer said, he's our best separator right now. Kind of crazy. Double D, 2 years ago, he's a defensive player. Now he made the switch at the NFL level to playing receiver.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And, you know, he's already
I think it's easier. It can be easier to switch from defense to, in my personal view, easier to switch from defense to offense than it is from offense to defense.
Is that because offensive guys are soft in general, or
because they're soft?
Why is that?
Mike, you said that. No, I just think that from an offensive standpoint, I think most football players have grew up playing offense. So they understand the technique that the ball's in the hand, you run the ball, you run routes, you catch it, you know, the simple techniques. But from a defensive standpoint, I mean, you know, you're either backpedaling, you're either reading, you're reading linemen, you're reading keys, you're reading all these different things. There's a lot of mental things happening, and the slower you are, you know, the more you're going to be behind the play, but the faster you are at identifying things, the more effective you are. So I think it's a little more easier. But like I said, he's doing a great job, special teams, even getting out there now, you know, with DJ Chark down, with Agnew stepping up, and, you know, some of the injuries having on offense. I mean, he's been doing a great job, you know, just giving Trevor Lawrence another opportunity and another option.
All right, well, here are the guys officially in the poll today. Which of these pass catchers will have the biggest positive impact for the Jags in the final 11 games of the season? Wide receiver Jamal Agnew, tight end Dan Arnold, wide receiver Marvin Jones Jr., or wide receiver Laviska Shenault, the guys you would expect to be the top four pass catchers for the Jags, barring something unforeseen happening. Already over 160 votes in on that. Marvin Jones Jr. leading the way closely over Dan Arnold, but everybody pulling about at least one-fifth of the vote. So I say about one-fifth of the vote. Laviska Shenault at 18% of the vote right now. So clearly other people – I mean, it's interesting that both other wide receivers are being voted to have a bigger impact for the Jags over the final 11 games of the season. But we're early on, and it is a Twitter poll, so hop on board. Presented by Maserati Jacksonville. I don't think this will define the season, but it will define some of the conversation for today. E.T.,
yeah.
We're back in – bye week's over, right? We got to get out of bad habits. We got to get back into good habits. And that means calling you up at 207-7071.
You say it so eloquently.
Thank you, my friend. Tell me what we're looking for on Come On Somebody, Come On Everybody this
week.
Well,
you know, the first half of the season is gone. We're on a bye week. So I want to know, has your expectations been met? And if not, what are they? So what are your current expectations moving forward after we came out of the bye
week? Okay, so like have they lived up to expectations? And either way, what do you expect out of the team basically for the final 11 games of the season?
Talk to me. Come on,
all right,
somebody.
207-7071. And you could be featured in the Jaguars radio pregame in Come On Somebody, Come On Everybody with ET. Mm-hmm. You can hit us up today on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Donovan Darius, and at IME to the T.
Come on, somebody.
And of course, on the phone lines and the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures at the same number. That's 641-1010. So if you want to get in with Donovan Darius, get in while the getting's good. He'll be here with us for another 20 minutes or so. Denny Thompson swings by today as we talk quarterback play, John Osier from Jaguars.com, and more coming your way. With Tony Smith, Double D, and ET, I'm Mike Dempsey. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I didn't agree with when he said this year's not about wins or losses. It's about the development of your young QB. I'm like, no. It's not. I want wins. I don't, you know, if they go 3-13 and let's just say Trevor goes to the Pro Bowl, let's just say, mm-hmm. I'll be like, great, but the team still stinks.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I wouldn't suspect Trevor's going to end up in the Pro Bowl.
Probably not.
This year. You know, you never know.
I have heard Orlovsky on ESPN has talked about Trevor Lawrence being a top 10 quarterback right now.
No, I heard top five yesterday. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, they're moving down. I mean, they're really projecting.
Well, I mean, look, he may, in terms of how he's playing.
Processing the game is what Orlovsky was talking about.
He could
about.
Be right. Yeah. It's just that, you know, it's more that just look through the AFC right now, all right, in no particular order. Lamar Jackson, Pro mm-hmm. Bowler. Josh Allen, Pro Bowler. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow, Pro Bowler, right? I mean, those are the first three that come to mind. Mahomes is, I mean,
fourth
he's
on the
struggling,
list.
Right?
He's
best,
tough. He's
at best,
tough.
He's fourth on Justin Herbert,
right? Yeah.
You put Justin Herbert in there, and you get three Pro Bowl quarterbacks out of each conference.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we all understand, you know, guys mm-hmm. pull out of the game and what have you. Will there even be a game this year? Where's the Pro Bowl being played this year?
I have no idea.
It was a skills challenge not, before, right?
So they moved it out of Orlando officially.
Have they? I'm asking. I'm ignorant to the Pro Bowl location.
I feel like they keep saying that they're going to move it like next year and it's right back in Orlando.
Like sometimes it's in Orlando. Sometimes it's been in the locale where the Super Bowl is. You know, I don't know. I would not be surprised if they don't have the Pro Bowl. I don't really think the guys care that much about it, Double
no,
D, right?
No, they don't. Well, once they got to the skills challenge, you know, it became a lot more attractive to guys because now they're doing something outside they're doing something within their position, but outside the element, you know, I remember thinking about the Pro Bowl was a game which potential chance to get injured, but it did not have any factor on any contract, you know, your
right.
performance or anything. And so
you want to be named a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you don't want the risk.
No, you don't want the risk. I mean, and especially back then, you know, when I was playing and even before then, I mean, those guys would come to play. I mean, I still remember that Sean Taylor hit when that punter,
sure.
you know, he basically, you know, decapitated.
Have you head on a swivel.
Yes.
It's going to be in Vegas, by the way.
Is it Vegas?
Yeah.
There you go. I told you I was ignorant to the ways of Pro Bowl locales.
They outbid Orlando for the
Pro Bowl. I'm not a big fan of the Pro Bowl, the game itself, because guys brother-in-law it. Yeah, they you know, I'm not going to hit you. You're not going to hit me. You know, let's just kind of – it's almost like as soon as the game starts, you're thinking about when I can get it over with
yeah.
so I can go spend some time with my
Can't
family.
Can't blitz. They don't want you hitting anybody too hard
yeah.
unless you're Sean Taylor and you just don't care.
Right, and right. You know? I mean, look, I don't know if there's a rule that you can't hit anybody hard. I think it's more, like Donovan says, kind of an understanding.
It's an understanding. Like, you've earned the right to be here. Why should your earnings, you know, why should your reward be a risk now?
Right.
Yeah.
And I do think, though, I don't know if it will change
That's
how many guys
are willing
games,
to play man.
The game.
That'll be 18 games.
At minimum, for some of these guys, you know, and obviously, you know, if you're – a playoff team that plays a couple games gets eliminated. Now you're getting into 20
yeah.
and on and on. But I imagine a lot of these guys are going to want to go to the locale of the Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
this year.
Vegas yeah. would be a bit of a draw. Right. Would be my guess.
Maybe not Honolulu, but no,
it'd be nice. It'd be nice to be recognized as you want to be recognized as one of the top guys in your position by your peers. I mean, that's a definite and that's a guarantee. But you don't want to go out there and risk injury, you know, because a lot of guys sometimes, a lot of guys are on their last contract, you know, and it's their contract year. They don't want to go out there and get hurt. And then now all of a sudden their market value, you know, is devalued because of that. And so, I mean, I know I had that situation 3 years, you know, when they franchised me 3 years in a row here. I mean, you know, if I made the Pro Bowl, that would have been another year, but it wouldn't have a factor on the fact that they still franchise me.
Right.
And a lot of times I know some guys, they'll say it's not really worth going to them as far as money-wise, depending on how much family they bring and all of that. It's like,
oh, yeah. You spend so much money just bringing guys over there, man. It's like debt. You know what I'm saying? You're like making side bets.
They want to treat their family, but it's like the Pro Bowl, if we win or whatever, it's like $50,000. Well, I'll spend like $75,000.
So they don't like – I mean, I would have always assumed that they're not going to put up your whole crew, but like you and a plus one –
No,
they don't. Nothing. Airfare. Nothing.
No. I mean, they may do it. You and plus one, but most guys think about that as a celebratory. So you got your kids.
Oh, sure.
You got your kids. You know, you have your father, your mother,
and they'd fly everybody out or in. Cliff was happy when the Pro Bowl was in Orlando because all the family drove up. He's still like, man, I still lost money on that.
Well, you know, it is
players
what it
is. On the winning team receive $74,000 for the game.
Yeah,
which is still, I mean, for us average Joe's.
Yeah,
For the players on the losing team, they get $37,000.
All right, so you got to figure out a way with a $37,000 budget to get the fam there, and if you don't fit in $37,000, you ain't coming. And we're gonna play then for an extra $37,000, basically, mm-hmm. right? That's
or like you say, you do play within the budget, and you come away with $10,000, so you just played the game for $10,000.
Yeah, all right. I mean, still, it's like it's not free. I mean, you guys have a warped sense this is 10 grand, you know what I mean? Like, we're just gonna hang out for the weekend, take everybody on a vacation out in Hawaii or Vegas or Orlando or whatever, and we'll make 10 grand for it. Ah, just 10 grand.
You know what? I think it really comes down to the fact that you understand that the NFL career is an average of 3 years,
sure,
you know, and so you don't have a long time, you know, such as you may as a plumber or some other ordinary job where you can have a longevity, you know, your time span is so short, so you just want to try to minimize as much risk as you can. That's all.
In all seriousness, looking at this Jaguar roster, right? I mean, come on, we're a 1-5 team. We're not going to be stacked with Pro Bowlers, right?
James Robinson.
Who James Robinson is the
That's
guy, it. Right?
He's the only one.
Is he the guy? Is he the most, you know, deserve? Like Trevor's the biggest name.
Should have been in the Pro Bowl last year.
Should have been, right? Wasn't. But who right now would he be the most deserving Jaguar at the top of the list at the moment? Kind of has to. I don't think anybody on defense.
Nobody
right?
else. Maybe Agnew.
Couple of those. Sure. Agnew is a return man, right? Agnew, I mean, special sure. teamers are a different category. So, yeah, maybe, you know, Logan Cook has been a really good punter, things like that. I wonder, you know, I'm not saying Robinson. If he didn't get the recognition last year, chances are he's not going to get it this year either. I wonder if any of those linemen are playing well enough, you know. Like, I'm not saying they're like a Pro Bowl studded line. Like, but if Linder had stayed healthy, is Cam Robinson playing to that level? I mean, both Logman and Pacelli have said that they think he's deserving of a contract extension. That doesn't mean he's playing at a Pro Bowl level.
No.
But it's. I think it's tough, Double D. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
You know, when you were watching film, you would see guys playing on the offensive line. How tough is it for you, even as a defensive player, to know which offensive linemen in the league are playing the best?
I mean, I could tell, you know, offensive linemen who are playing the best because, again, they're not giving up any sacks and all that stuff. But I think, you know, going back to your question about the Pro Bowl, I think they're more likely to give the Pro Bowl nod to a lineman who's on a winning team.
Yeah.
Because they're figuring that you're doing something right, even though, you know, guys around you may be doing a good job versus trying to find a guy on a losing team.
Sure.
You know, because they're going to blame you, you know.
Well, the case for James Robinson is that it's tough, I think, when you are on a losing team to put up the kind of rushing numbers that he did last year. You know, you got to abandon the run sometimes when you're behind that much in today's NFL. But yeah, look, hopefully.
Who would he beat out? I mean, you got Derrick Henry.
He's certainly not beating out Derrick Henry.
You look in the AFC, it would be Derrick Henry, Jonathan Taylor. Is having a good
year. Najee Harris is having a pretty good year.
Joe Mixon is probably up there in yards.
Nick Chubb missed the last game, but he's been doing
pretty well. He's in the wrong conference.
Yeah.
Like, if he was playing in the NFC, I think the road to it would be a whole lot easier to see. Because you got Zeke and probably Kamara would be who he'd be competing with. The third best in yards, I'm looking at the list right now, in the NFC is Leonard Fournette. That's the third best. It would be easier to get there because But in the AFC, you're dealing with Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor and Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb. Like, there's just a bunch more guys.
That's the Fred Taylor syndrome.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Freddie T was a great player, but once I did the exercise and I went back and I looked year by year, and granted, it's only based on stats. And one thing that would seem to happen with Fred Taylor is Pro Bowl voting would close and Fred would end the season on a freaking tear, right? And it would be like it wouldn't factor in to getting selected or not to the Pro Bowl. But if you just looked at year-end numbers, Fred happened to play in the AFC in a time where you had LaDainian Tomlinson, you had Priest Holmes, you had
Jerome Bettis,
you had just on and on and on. Yeah.
Larry Johnson for 2 years,
right?
But
it'd be
those
like
are
2 years. Clinton Portis for some of that time. I mean, and these guys would have tremendous years. Edgerrin James and on and on. And you know, so you look and there might be four or five guys that were just having sick seasons. And if the Jags weren't winning as much as some of those other ones, it's tough to get that recognition, man. Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, I remember, playing here as from a safety standpoint. I mean, we had, Lori Mallory, we had, Darren Sharper, we had several, John Lynch, we had several guys who all were, part of these larger market areas, the Jets. I mean, you had all these things. And so you weren't getting a lot of publicity, especially even in Fred's case, down in the AFC, being in Jacksonville as an expansion team. And like you said, he would have some of his greatest games, after the Pro Bowl voting was closed.
Yeah, he was a closer, man. In terms of the season, it seemed like he got better as the season went on. Double D from the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures, question for you. Shaq Griffin has been really, really good in coverage by the numbers, but when I watch, I feel like he's the best corner on the team, but he's still league average. Is it a lack of turnovers, or is the rest of the secondary playing poorly that's affecting what I see with Shaq? What are your impressions of what Shaq Griffin has done this year?
I think he's out there. I mean, he doesn't have the same team that he had before, so they don't have the continuity. I think with them having, when I say a young secondary, just not being together for a long time, you don't really know where each person's going to be. I think sometimes it comes down to technique errors. He's having some technique errors, and he's being exposed on some things. Remember, as I always say, man, that eye in the sky is not going to lie. So they're going to watch you. They're going to see what you're good at. They're going to see what you bite on. They're going to see, how they can take advantage of you. And in some schemes, he may have been protected, be based off of the defensive call and what he was asked to do. And in our scheme, right now, teams are just, they're just dropping back and just, firing the ball.
I'm sure you've had teammates that you've played with that have gone up against former teams that they played on, right? Or vice versa, you play against guys who used to be your teammate and they're coming back against the Jags. What is that like? What is Shaq mentally going to go through a little bit this week from what you can tell, going up against, obviously you want to show out, you want to show those guys, hey, you lost a good one. Right. Should have paid me. Should have hung on to me. Whatever the case.
Well, I mean, I think you have a little chip on your shoulder. I remember when at my last year, I was with the Raiders for the training camp, and then I was with the Miami Dolphins. And then when we played Miami Dolphins during the season, I started that game. I mean, and I had a chip on my shoulder. I mean, I put out two running backs. In that game, I mean, I was coming filling the alley. I mean, it's like, hey, this is what you lost. And so from his standpoint, if he can get a pick, he can get a pass breakup, or he'll have a chip on his shoulder.
I can either put running backs down on the other team, or I can put your running backs
in the game.
I had two. I dropped two.
He remembers. Is there any explanation, Donovan, for why the Jags seem to have struggled historically making these trips to the West Coast as much as they seem to have had?
Well, you know, I know early on with us, we used to go with Coach Coughlin. We used to go the day before, so you're not getting acclimated to the weather out there. I think sometimes they become mentally, you know, people start thinking, you know, from a momentum standpoint, oh, when we go out here, we struggle. But again, there's no telltale. I mean, it still comes down to execution, so there's really no excuse.
What's that? Lumen Field is what it's called now, right?
I believe that's correct.
Right. I mean, whatever. I don't, you know, keep up with all the different sponsorship names of them. Double D, how long has that stadium been in existence? Been a while.
In the 2000s, because remember, it was the loudest stadium. The way they designed it, supposed to have been for the 12th man to
right.
Make
they,
it the loudest.
They in Kansas City would go back and forth as to it was named. Let's see.
What was it? Was it Microsoft? Was it Microsoft?
It was Quest Field. It was CenturyLink Field.
2002, I believe,
is when it debuted.
I believe so.
Stadium was built between 2000 and 2002. So, have you played in this facility?
I did.
You did?
I have. I played with the Raiders. Raiders was my last preseason game there.
I think it's gorgeous, man. I just think like aesthetically being in that stadium is like wow.
It's nice. It's nice. But I tell you what, I mean, I only can see it on TV, but that LA Rams stadium looks like a whole city.
Yeah, that's a different experience, man.
You know, it's a $5 billion stadium. I mean, that's an amazing stadium to play in.
Yeah, I would imagine so. All right. Well, Double D, we'll wrap with this. What kind of chance do you give the Jags to go into Seattle and make it a two-game winning streak?
Well, with Geno Smith at quarterback, you know, versus Russell Wilson, I mean, I give them a chance. I mean, Geno, you know, he has been average, you know, at best and been making some plays. And so Jack's coming off of a bye week. They can believe that they can win because they have won. And I think more guys are more motivated about getting, you know, another win in the win column.
Yeah, I don't think the Jags have a player on the par of Alvin Kamara. But I think overall their skill position guys are better than what New Orleans rolled out on Monday night. And, you know, the question is, can they hold Seattle down as the Saints defense did, because they haven't held anybody below 20 in a long, long time. So
yeah,
we'll find out. Double D, always a pleasure.
Likewise.
Let's extend a winning streak and have another victory Wednesday coming up.
We love it. I know the players love it when the coach come in and say, all right, I'll see you guys on Wednesday.
Exactly.
You know, everybody celebrates.
Yeah.
Everybody celebrates.
Where can folks catch you between now and then?
Oh, man, like I said, I'll be the same thing, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. You know, I'll be out there still coaching Providence. We got a game Thursday night at 6:30 because the Florida-Georgia game is coming into town, which I'm sure everybody will be, you know, around here, you know, tailgating, you know, throughout that. So, you know, that's what we'll be doing.
Well, good luck, and we'll look forward to seeing you a week from today.
All right, boss.
There he goes. Donovan Darius, everybody, with us every Wednesday on Jaguars Today. We'll turn our attention to quarterback play with Denny Thompson. Joining us next with Tony Smith and ET, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, the quarterback whisperer, Denny Thompson.
Okay, bring it in.
Brought to you by Zero Res and Honest Abe Roofing.
But really, if you look at the last 3 or 4 weeks, he's just continued to climb and climb and climb and climb. And the composure this guy has is, if you didn't know any better, you wouldn't think he was a rookie.
That, of course, is our quarterback whisperer, Denny Thompson. I don't know what he's going to whisper about today. We didn't play a game. We're going to look back. It's victory week part two. Denny Thompson here with us, and it brought to you by one of our new sponsors here on this segment, Zero Res. Denny, I know you're big fans of those guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm moving, actually, which y'all know is not very much fun. But the easiest part of the process has been getting them involved. My wife was like, hey, new house is going to be completely clean. I heard a Zero Res commercial here on 1010. Said, hey, tell them about the surface cleaning. Called. They're coming out right away. Easy, easy, easy.
Boom.
Everybody should do it. Yep. Move into a new house, completely clean. Keep your old house needs to be clean too, right?
Yeah.
It's a bad look if you move out and just leave it a mess.
Oh, you don't want to leave it. No, you don't want to leave it atrocious. But yeah.
Surface cleaning. I didn't know that was a thing.
The new one is a little more important to me. My wife, I say, you know, we all dream about what would happen if we hit the lottery.
Yeah.
Like my wife and I, we don't have like, you know, I don't need some 50,000 square foot place. We just want a maid.
Exactly. No, exactly.
Like, I want a maid and a cook.
A maid and no, I want a maid and a personal trainer and probably a cook too. Yeah, probably a chef. But just those three things, right? Just those three
That's
things.
That's it.
So,
wow.
Make life easy on
me. I mean, a private jet while we're at it.
I don't need a private jet.
I don't need a house. If they're cooking my meals, I don't care.
Honestly, I just need a bed to lay in. I got a nice bed. I'm fine with the bed I have, you know?
I would get a driver in a heartbeat, though.
Driver wouldn't be bad.
I don't ever want to drive anywhere again.
Yeah?
No.
I don't know. I don't mind driving.
Y'all differ from me. I'm getting everything.
Mm. Oh, I'm sure I'd get more things, E, but that's like the first thing we talk about is like, let's get the maid. Is it the maid or the chef? Probably the maid, right? Because we don't want the chef cooking in a dirty house, right?
Well, that's true. That's true. You need somebody to clean the dishes.
Not that our house is dirty. It's just that we don't want to have to take care of it anymore. That's all. We want somebody
By the way,
else to
E winning the lottery would be amazing.
Ooh, boy. I'd go broke.
I love you, E.
I'd give away a lot. I would. I'd give away a
Look
lot.
Look out for you. I saw it. Honestly, I dreamt about that, like having wads of $10,000 and just handing them out. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking about like winning the crazy.
Like you want
the
half, throwing half it out the window?
The half a billion, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. You know what?
Forget the $14 million.
10 grand, never come back to me again. Never call. Lose my number. There's 10 grand. Lose my number. Get out of here. All right, Danny Thompson. Let's talk some quarterback play, man. We did not have a game to reflect back on, but from your perspective, as a guy who gets quarterbacks ready to play at their highest level, what did you hope that Trevor Lawrence was doing during the bye week?
Relaxing.
Okay.
That's the first thing. He's been going, man. I mean, you think about the process for these young guys. You know, there's the summer before, which has all worked out, especially with COVID, the way that worked out. They started camp early his last year in high school, or I'm sorry, college. Well, all through the college season, all the way through draft prep, combine prep, all that kind of stuff, ton of wear and tear on the arms, and then right into rookie minicamp. And with him, he had a surgery. So he got a little bit of downtime, but then he had to rehab all of that. So hopefully he got some much-needed rest. And then I think, you know, the what everybody does is the self-scout thing. But I would think he would have gotten a lot of confidence out of that to see where he was. And I would self-scout all the way back to scrimmages if I was the Jags, because new staff, more film, to see where he was when they started mechanically and where he is now. It's night and day. And it's so much better. And you feel like you got so much more control in the ball. And just knowing that, I think, probably gives you confidence heading in the second half.
Where does that show up the most when you watch him, when you say, that is better? Like, give us an example of what you see.
His base is the first thing. But I was very vocal about him coming out of Clemson and his inability to throw left or down the middle because of how he lost his front side. Without getting too technical, he lost his front, like the front shoulder. Would just spin out. He'd kind of be off balance. He's gotten so much better at that. Trent Dilfer came out and says something about it this week as well, which I appreciated because it's something I've been saying since like January, but it sounds better coming from Trent than it does from me. DJ's doing the same thing. I don't know what they're doing at Clemson. Mm. But it's one of those things where he just kind of – you kind of get back to what you know, and he was very mechanically sound coming into Clemson, and it just starts to feel better, and you get more confidence. Like – it's like now I'm throwing to a certain spot with a 6-inch miss radius instead of a 2-foot miss radius. And in the NFL, that's a really big deal.
No doubt that it is. And you look at, I've been saying this for a few days now on the show, it's that we continue to see the improvement from Trevor week to week, and that's with Brandon Linder getting hurt. It's with AJ Cann getting hurt. It's with DJ Chark leaving the lineup now as maybe your top guy, but certainly one of your top guys in that receiving core as well. Now, they may have found something in Jamal Agnew when everything is said and done, but he doesn't have that size, speed kind of factor that a guy like DJ Chark has. And despite all of this happening around Trevor Lawrence, it feels like he continues to progress week to week.
Yeah, and it's the things that – and I want to give the coaches credit on this too, because they seem to be calling a more comfortable game for him. And I think Trevor's taken some of that over as well. I think the progressions that we're seeing Trevor make are more year three progressions than year one progressions, setting protections. I was talking to Coach Campo about this last week, and he was seeing the same thing. It's setting the protections, being more vocal, getting his guys into the right routes. We still got to work, and I think I saw on the cut sheet that Urban talked about this, but we still got to work on the scramble thing. Like, there is no real plan, it seems like, when Trevor gets out of the pocket for the receivers. Mm-hmm. It just kind of seems like they just kind of float, right? So it's like, if he can get that and they've got a good run-pass mix with him, not talking about James Robinson, I think they could win three or four more games.
Is that something that surprises you? Like some of these things you hear, like, you know, we haven't worked on the quarterback sneak. We haven't worked on the scramble drill. And you're like, what?
Yes.
You know, like, wait, at what point should this have been, you know, it's somewhere in the offseason, right? They should have paid a little bit more attention to this, or am I wrong?
No, you're right. It's funny, the quarterback sneak thing, when that was said, my first thought was, that's ridiculous. There's no way. And so I called a couple buddies of mine who does the same thing, even some NFL coaches. I was like, have y'all ever heard this? Everyone was like, no, absolutely not. Like, every quarterback knows how to run a quarterback sneak. They've been doing it since they were in Pop Warner.
He claimed he had never done it, though. He had never had to do it because he always played out of the pistol or the shotgun, and they never asked him to do it at Clemson. And I'm not trying to make excuses for the Jags.
He's taking snaps under center.
Sure.
And he's run forward.
I don't know. He said he had never had to do a quarterback sneak before. So
okay, well, maybe it's a new thing. Because I will say this.
I don't think it's that difficult. I'm not trying to make it like it's some rocket science thing. I think he should be able to, you know, instinctively know what to do there. David Garrard, though, says that it's a little trickier. If you're not used to doing it, there is a little bit of a nuance to learning what you're, you know, having the feel to do it the right way.
Well, David would know. And I will say this. I think that specific play we keep going back to, I think it hurts because nobody was in A-gap. So it was like a walk-in quarterback sneak. That was the thing. But the scramble drill, yeah, that's very surprising to me that we're a good, 10 weeks in since the start of training camp, at least. That should be buttoned down right now. Like, that really should be. And it's one of those things where I think as fans, we've been talking about it for, since week one or two.
Shouldn't these receivers – but, like, Marvin Jones has been around, right?
Yeah, they should have an idea.
Right, like you've played enough football, you don't need to be told necessarily, like, all right, the play breaks down, your quarterback is scrambling out of the pocket, you can't just float. You gotta give him a target. You got to come back to the ball. You got to continue to work to separate from your guy, and you got to kind of flow with him. If the play breaks down and all of a sudden he's scrambling right and the play was going left, well, you got to make yourself available in his field of vision, right?
Yeah, I think the rules are pretty consistent on those. Like, regardless of where you go, they'll put their own spin on it based on concepts, but the rules are pretty consistent with when your quarterback gets out of the pocket in trouble, here's what you do. So you're right, Mike. I mean, in some of that, that's got to be instinct of whoever, LaVisca or whoever, saying, oh, he's in trouble, here's where I go. Let me get there quickly instead of just kind of floating around. But I learned last year, you know, interestingly enough, a lot of the things we take for granted, Jeff Sims, who plays at Georgia Tech, was taking hit after hit after hit. And so I called him one night. I'm like, yo, why are you not sliding? He's like, we never worked on it. Mm. I was like, you don't know how to slide? He's like, I don't know how to slide. Mm. So I had to go up to, like, literally that week, go up to Georgia Tech and be like, oh, my bad, dude. I just assumed you knew how to slide. And so I think a lot of the things, the game has changed so much that a lot of these things that we take for granted, maybe these kids haven't done.
That boggles my mind. Like, if you grew up, like, even if you didn't play organized baseball, did you not play any baseball as a kid? Did you never have to do a pop-up slide?
Well, you'll see guys every now and then, you watch enough college or NFL games, and they'll be running. Quarterbacks will be running, and they can't slide.
Right there.
They get, like, the fetal position and roll over, yeah.
Like, it's this weird-looking thing, and then you'll watch, like, a Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson, and it's like, oh, it's a baseball player.
Exactly.
Like, they're doing a pop-up slide. They know exactly what he's doing when he gets put in that situation. How do you think the Jaguars should be looking to use Jamal Agnew, who has certainly emerged, it feels like right now, is the third wide receiver on this team at worst?
I spent a lot of time with him in the offseason, a ton of time with Jamal. One, a great guy. But he's got great hands. And when he runs routes, it looks different than when anybody else runs routes. So I don't think there's anything off the table for him. Like, I think for him, double moves, because he's such a quick accelerator guy, double moves – and anything that widens him out, so wheel routes or anything that creates space that somebody has to make up because they can't. He's so fast. And a lot of that's quick, right? A lot of that is you're so anxious to get on top and make the tackle because you're scared he's going to shake you that the minute a pump fake comes or the minute you look like he's declaring a space, that DB is going to drive towards it, right? Because he don't want to be embarrassed when he catches it. So I think with a week off, they've probably looked and said, all right, here's five or six different concepts that we feel really comfortable that Agnew can create explosive plays for. I think we see them right off the bat. And I think it's a great opportunity to do it against the defense they're about to play as well.
You would think they have been giving it up statistically in a big way so far this year. Denny, our question of the day, presented by Maserati Jacksonville, asked which of these pass catchers will have the biggest positive impact for the Jags in the final 11 games of the season. That includes Agnew. Alphabetically, Agnew, Dan Arnold, Marvin Jones Jr., LaVisca Chenault. Who will have the biggest positive impact?
It has to be Marvin Jones. He's the guy that they need to take a whole nother step because he's going to be here a while, and he needs to be that guy that Trevor is super comfortable with. That when nothing else goes right, I know where Marvin is, and he's going to be there 100% of the time. So I think for the benefit of the offense and the benefit of 16, it needs to be Marvin.
Marvin winning the poll right now, 35%, 29 for Dan Arnold, 20 for Agnew, and 15 and change for LaVisca Chenault. Still time to vote at MD_1010XL on Twitter. Got over 250 votes in on that already. Denny, we appreciate your service as always, my man.
And blast.
Hopefully let's stretch out this glow, the afterglow of winning.
I know.
Going up to Seattle, what kind of chance do you give Trev and the crew?
I think pretty good. I'm a Saints fan, so I watched that whole game. That was an ugly game on both sides. But, man, that's the first time I've really watched Seattle. Not the same Seattle I'm used to seeing.
No.
I mean, they're not fast like they used to be. I think Jacksonville's got a really good chance.
I know they held New Orleans to 13. Held is relative term. The weather wasn't great. Jameis doesn't have playmakers around him other than Kamara.
Yeah.
And it was like they never took him away, and then he just dumped it down. I don't think the Jags have a single guy as good as Kamara. I think their collection of skill players is better than what New Orleans is running out at the moment, though.
Oh, yeah, and New Orleans' record is they're not that good. I mean, I watch every Saints game. This isn't a great Saints team. They've benefited from playing some bad teams and getting calls and stuff like that. I think Jacksonville's got a very good chance in this game. In fact, I would pick them to win.
See the stat, Seattle has opened 0-3 at home for the first time since 1992. I think that's what ultimately led them to get Rick Meyer. So good times on the horizon.
That's
Seattle
back when
fans.
They were getting like 15,000 with bags on their heads.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So let's send them back to the dark ages on Sunday. Denny Thompson can be found on Twitter at Denny_Thompson. 6 points Jacks is where you'll find all the great stuff he does in terms of getting quarterbacks ready for the next level of play, whatever that next level happens to be. So you can go to 6pointsjacks.com to learn more. That's the numeral 6pointsjacks.com. And every Wednesday he stops by to whisper about the quarterbacks, particularly Trevor Lawrence here in Jacksonville. Denny, enjoyed it, man. Let's get another dub, and let's talk again next Wednesday.
Absolutely, man. Always love it.
All right, buddy. There he goes. Denny Thompson out the door. John Osier ready to swing in through that door from Jaguars.com. That's coming up next. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010 on the phone lines or the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. We'll hear some in hour two from Urban Meyer speaking on yesterday's Urban Meyer show here on 1010XL as well. Tony will take you around the league next. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
We're doing the right things. Now we got to play a little better pass defense. We got to be much better on third downs and much better in the red zone. That's what we found out. Now we're going to go to work and fix those things.
All Jags, all NFL. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Little self-scouting went down this past week.
Third down, red zone.
Got to fix third down, red zone. Score more points, allow fewer points. Better pass defense. Like to throw the ball more effectively.
Uh-huh.
Dominate special teams. Win a bunch of games.
Yeah.
Why they don't holler at me? They know I'm affiliated with Seattle. They need to scout. They need to holler at me.
Would you give them the inside scoop?
I'd give them the whole book.
Would you?
The whole thing.
Okay.
The whole tootin' caboodle.
You tell them the secret to the success is a shot and a half a hen before the game?
And a half a Patron.
And a half. What do they call that?
Patrinacy? Yes, sir. Yeah. You're learning.
I'm learning.
We're going to do one? Super Bowl. This year.
Yeah.
So, lock. Let's go. Tony Smith, you too. Come on, somebody.
Patrinacy.
I have no interest in any of that.
I don't either, but I'd do it with you. Because E.T.'s got that Svengali thing going on. You can make me. You can lead me to Patrinacy, and you can make me
Let's
drink.
Lock it in. Yep.
All right.
Super Bowl.
And we'll see about the Super Bowl, man. I don't know, pandemic conditions. I don't know what the deal is with the Super Bowl.
I can't go 2 years in a row without it. Let's not speak that into existence.
All right, I'm not speaking anything into existence. I'm being a realist here. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with the Radio Row situation in the state of California. Is the state of California going to make us take a COVID test every morning, or what exactly?
I don't know what they do. Yeah.
I don't have any idea.
I wouldn't want to take a COVID test every morning.
It's not that big. Honestly, I don't think that's
big
a deal. That big a deal. If you had to go in and they stick a little swab in your nose and you're like, all right.
It's not quick.
I don't know. I felt like the ones they are doing for, they do them every Wednesday morning down at the stadium, right, for the media. Do it right in the middle of the show. So thank you, guys. Appreciate you looking out for old Jaguars today. The first couple times I went down there, they were doing them like at 9 a.m. And I felt like the first time I ever got a COVID test, they jammed that swab up there, man. Yeah. Like, oh, my, eye watering. You're like,
eye water, yeah.
But I felt like the lovely nurses who administered the couple down at the stadium didn't bother me in the least. So I don't know. You know, maybe they were getting up in the good COVID area.
Yeah, every day would be a bit much.
Yeah, probably would.
But you do what you do.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the biggest inconvenience. It's not like you have to, I would imagine at Radio Row, they'd have it all set up. I mean, it would just be a matter of how long would the line be to get in. We're used to just skating in and out, doing all whatever
we want.
How long
would the line be, and what happens if, the time between the test and going in the room, what happens if this guy tested positive in line?
No. We're so all
what
close
happens
contacts.
To everybody that's in that line?
Radio Row is shut down because ET's out here patrenicing up with everybody, getting in everyone's face, breathing on them. Man, Alan Lazard can't play. That bums out a lot of fantasy managers.
Oh, you are kidding.
I mean, it's bad enough when Davante Adams tests positive for COVID. Lazard just got near him and he hadn't had the vaccine.
Yeah,
so
had a couple good weeks in a row, too.
And I was all ready to slide him right on into the lineup, Tony.
Heat up Randall Cobb.
I guess so. Maybe MVS as well. Who knows?
We'll see. Yep.
John, so self-scouting for the Jags over the past week, you heard Urban Meyer. Got to play better pass defense. How do you play better pass defense? Obviously, you got to generate some more pass rush, but how do you do that if you're this football team?
Well, what they're trying is they're going to zone. They clearly, through six games, have decided that the personnel they have is not conducive to playing all man, all press. So you make the change, you try to get better pass rush. You hope they play better. You hope they adapt to the techniques. I think realistically it's going to be something that they address, try to fix, they work on all season. And I think through six games you're holding your breath when that team's – the other team goes back to pass. I don't know that they're going to stop holding their breath. They hope to play a little better, and maybe if they get pass rush, you get one turnover a game to negate the big plays you're giving up. I don't know they're going to be a great pass defense this year.
Yeah, that'd be nice if they could generate some of that pass rush. I mean, you know, the thing with Geno Smith, it seems like there are occasions, it's not like I've studied him recently. He's had some good moments, but he's had some moments where he just hangs on to the ball too long and doesn't have that spidey sense going off. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just got to get rid of it. You saw that one with DeMario Davis running him down on Monday Night Football that basically ended the game, put him in fourth and 20-something at their own inside their own 10. But
that one play a game where you're saying, how could he not see that?
Just right. You got to feel it a little bit better. And I think that's what a lot of people are saying. Hey, you know what? If this were Russell Wilson, I don't think anybody would be picking the Jags to win this football game. They might say, you know what? We can be competitive with this team. They're not the Seahawks of old, Tony. But I think a lot of people think because of the presence of Geno, they can win this football game.
Yeah, you don't expect Seattle to be able to score all that much. Even with the dynamic players that they have in that offense, still a wide receiver, they have been limited in what they can do as far as scoring the football in the few weeks that Geno's been playing. Now, they played a bunch of close games because the defense has been good enough to keep them competitive in those games. And I think coming out of the game on Monday night, you watch the effort that they had in run defense against Kamara. And for me, I'm looking at it for James Robinson coming into this game. If Seattle does what they did in run defense against Jacksonville, I think Seattle wins the game. Honestly, I think that's how important James Robinson is for this Jaguars run offense to get the offense in gear.
I don't expect Seattle to be able to do that back-to-back weeks. After watching them through the first month and a half, they were able to do it 1 week, right? They were able to slow down Kamara effectively, but they haven't slowed down anybody else in the run game to this point this year. And if you're Jacksonville, you hope it's not a trend that Seattle's figuring some things out, that instead they really do have an issue stopping the run.
You know what this is, though? It's a big Al Woods revenge game.
It is.
You know, on that defensive line.
And never underestimate that.
Yeah. It's always a somebody revenge game, man. It's the Shaq Griffin revenge game. It's the Philip Dorsett revenge game as well, right? Didn't get his opportunity. He's on that roster.
It's a deep dip. Yeah.
It's a Jake Luton. Oh, yeah, exactly. You know what? We're all getting ready for Geno.
Y'all keep talking. And this is becoming more and more like we got no shot.
Right? I mean, you combine the powers of Jake Luton, Philip Dorsett, and Al Woods, three great Jaguars.
I mean, how do you overcome that?
I do not know how you overcome that. John, what, if anything, can Trevor Lawrence do during a bye week to, you know, other than just kind of reflect on where he's been, really kind of, you know, take some extra time? I think when you get into that game mode, yeah, you look at this week's film, but you're not looking back at what you did in week two, right? And during the bye week, you have that opportunity to go back and kind of, you know, quote unquote, self-scout a little bit. Is that the most beneficial thing that he could have done with the extra time he had?
I kind of liked what Danny said about it. Just rest, get away. It's been a long road for him in terms of prepping for the draft. Everybody knows all that. You know, generally, I think what he probably does is look at it and say, okay, what I'm doing to improve from week one to now is clearly working. He, you know, again, I'll defer to Denny on quarterback mechanics. He seems to be infinitely better at a lot of basic quarterback stuff that he was even in week one. That should give him confidence that the decision-making, the process that he's going through to make these decisions, whatever he's doing is working. I don't know how much of a huge jump we're going to see from now to the end of the season with him, only because I don't know that there are big play, dynamic playmakers in the offense to really have that, oh, wow, he's putting up incredible numbers type season. But I think as long as you continue to see the development, the pocket presence continue to develop, and the decision-making continue to stay down one interception every two or three games, if he stays around there, I think you're going to see the development continue. So I would just keep doing what you're doing if you're Trevor Lawrence right now.
Seven touchdowns, eight interceptions, around 60% completion percentage, 59.7 for Trevor to this point this year. How do you expect those numbers to play out when everything is said and done this season?
It's 7-8 now. I expect the interceptions to finish around, what, you got 11 games left. He's cut it down to one every three. If it's one every two, he finishes around 16, 17, 18, somewhere in there. And then the touchdowns, you would expect to get past that and finish in probably the low 20s. Again, I don't know if there's the speed personnel separation that he's going to have a bunch of three or four touchdown games to get that number way high. But you'd expect it to finish more touchdowns than interceptions. And if over the last 11 games he's 2-1 in that area, I think that's what you're looking for.
All right, let's get back to a little bit from Urban Meyer on the Urban Meyer Coach's Show yesterday here on 1010XL, and one thing he pointed out was a couple of strengths he feels like the Jaguars have on offense.
There's two strengths right now, and that is our yards per carry is in the top five in the NFL. I think it's five, might be six. And then also we're in the top five, six, I believe, in the NFL as far as keeping our quarterback upright, keeping people off our quarterback. So those are two positives of an offense.
Well, those are two pretty good things. I mean, you know, yards per carry, James Robinson's got to have the Jags in that among the leaders, really, if you combine the last season and a half.
Yeah, I think he's fifth in the league among running backs that have at least 50 carries on the season and 5.5 yards a carry to this point this year. I mean, that's really, really good for James Robinson. It's, again, we go back to the first couple weeks of the season, and even now they're getting him the ball more certainly than they did against Houston in week one, but they're still not getting him the ball enough, it doesn't feel like, within their game plan right now.
We'll see. I mean, I think if he consistently gets 20-plus touches a game, I think a lot of his, you know, in a given game, I'm okay if he gets 20 carries, five or six receptions.
That's a lot. Yeah.
It is, but you look at what Derrick Henry's doing. I mean, Derrick Henry is getting like 35 5 touches a game. I mean, it's insane what he's doing. And I'm not saying they're the exact same player.
James Robinson has 107 less carries than Derrick Henry this year.
Mm.
That's a lot.
That is a ton.
Right.
107.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so you're talking like 15 plus a week.
Yeah.
Or around that neighborhood, you know, just roughly off the top of your head. But the other side of it is not taking sacks, right? And a lot of that is on the quarterback, I believe. Although
I think most of the difference in pass protection between this year and last year, he's so good in the pocket. He gets rid of the ball at the right time. It's where he's really next level right now in anything is amazing pocket presence for a rookie.
Urban Meyer said AJ can done for the year. So Ben Bartsch will be the guy going forward here. Although Linder is expected back sooner rather than later. Are they getting to the point, though, John? I mean, right now with Linder out at the moment, with Bartsch in the starting lineup, where you're getting a little bit nervous about the depth, or are they still okay in your estimation?
Well, you're nervous about the depth because they've shown that they have 7 guys who could play at the beginning of the season, meaning Can, Bartsch, Shatley, Will Richardson's done a nice job. So you've had, I think, more depth than most people thought you were going to have. But once, you know, most teams don't have 5 or 6 who can play. To have 7 or 8 is a luxury. But you're certainly now to the point where you're going to be putting guys in who you don't know what they can do yet. So it's a concern, but it's where they're at.
Is Jamal Agnew at this point your third wide receiver who also plays special teams? Is that the way you treat him?
I think he has to be until he proves he can't handle it. And he handled it. He had one really, really good game as a wide receiver. He had 5 for 78 against Miami. I think you need to make sure that he's not that guy before you take that back away from him. So, yeah, I mean, he showed speed. It's going to be interesting to see as they give him more to do, as they give him more responsibility, how good a wide receiver he can be, if you'll have to use him more gimmicks, or can he actually fit into the offense and really be a guy that you can count on to run multiple routes on the route tree. I don't think we know that yet.
All right, give me a number off the top of your head. Give me your best guess.
7.
7.
Oh, wait. Okay, gotcha.
That's not going to win it, but appreciate you jumping right in. On a per-game basis, how many punt and kickoff returns combined is Jamal Agnew averaging per game?
Okay,
right
so
now? Actual returns, not including fair
not
catches.
Fair
I mean, he goes back for a lot of kickoffs. They go into the end zone. He doesn't bring him out. So what would you say?
Less than two.
Tony?
Yeah, I was going to say 1.8.
1.8. ET, you got to get 3. 2.5. Uh-huh. So, I mean, you're 2.5. Return 2 to 3 returns a game. Is that, I mean, you know what I mean? Is that something that
it's so taxing that you can't
right,
play
that,
him on
that,
offense?
Okay, 5 for 78, and you're going to run, you know, 20 pass routes a game or whatever the case may be. I don't think that's.
Oh, I don't think he's necessarily worried about taking away what he can do on special teams. It's he just started playing this position, what, 1.5 years ago. Can he do everything as a receiver that you want him to do?
Probably not.
So
you know what he can do? Apparently he can get some separation.
No doubt.
Right? Catch the football.
I think you start trying to give him more and more and reach the point where you find out what he can't do, if that makes sense.
Sure. Let's hit up cut 5 here from Urban if we could. Just want to get one more in before we hit the break here. We'll come back and take a deep look at the question of the day. Today also have your JOY injury outlook as well. Urban Meyer saying yesterday, never wanted to win more for an area owner or group of players than he does right now.
I'm not sure I've ever wanted something as bad for an owner and for an area and for a group of players than to get this thing going. You know, you hear people take a shot at Jacksonville. You hear, you know, you watch our guys play, and I mean, we had arguably one of the best teams in the NFL right now, Phoenix Cardinals, and our guys played their tails off. You know, we just got to be smart with the ball. We had Cincinnati down 14-0, and they just beat the heck out of Baltimore. So there's a lot of positives, a lot of momentum. We just gotta eliminate self-inflicted errors and stick together.
That is the NFL, though, Tone. Like. Mm-hmm. Jags, man, you feel like, man, they could have beat Arizona, could have beat Cincinnati, right? Two teams that have turned out to be really good, really, really good. Mm-hmm. But you look at Detroit. Do you think Detroit's a good team? Right? I mean, they were knocking on the door. Should have beat Baltimore, right? Should have beat Minnesota, or at least could have beat both of those teams. Lost on last-second field goals in both of those situations. Played the Rams a lot tougher than people expected, including myself, out in Los Angeles. And all that's great, and there is a lot of parity in the NFL, but the devil's in those details of how do you get from playing a team close to consistently winning. I don't know if that's the where they talk about we got to learn how to win or if you just got to make a few more plays and you got to have the playmakers to do that. But Detroit's been knocking on the door, but you look at it, and at the end of the day, they're a winless football team. And, you know, you are what your record says you are. And it's great that you can compete with these teams. You got to find a way to finish them off, though.
The NFL is built for close games. You're supposed to play teams tough. And as you said, the difference is teams that win are the good teams late in games. It's the plays you make at the end of games.
That defines whether you're good or not.
Right.
Are you you can have all the personnel say our team on paper, this and that. Do you consistently make the plays that make the difference?
Which is why the quarterback matters so much.
Absolutely. The most important thing, to be sure. All right, we'll come back. One final segment to go. John Osier is here with us with Tony Smith and ET. I'm Mike Dempsey. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All Jags, all NFL. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, before we get to the question of the day, time to take a look at the injury outlook with Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, JOI, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars, and joined today once again by Dr. Lance Snyder. Dr. Snyder, what's going on this morning? How are you?
It's a great Wednesday. You know, we're still relishing in the Jaguar victory, so yeah, let's keep it rolling.
You know how this game is played. We've got a week and a half of victory talk out of that one game. So let's keep it going, brother.
Did you stay up and watch that baseball game last night?
I do not watch so-called baseball when my team is eliminated. So, no, I did not watch any of that game last night. Why? Should we talk about the importance on avoiding comebackers through the box so you don't break your leg if you're Charlie Morton?
What a bummer of an injury.
I got to take it you're a Braves fan. Is that correct?
Well, no, I just like baseball.
Okay.
And I just don't like trash cans. Just kidding.
I'm definitely with you on that.
Yeah, no, I just want to see the Astros go down. So.
Look, I do too, but, you know, Tony's sitting across
from me. Let me be so happy.
I'm finding out just how many Brave shirts Tony owns. ET, have you noticed this? The wardrobe has really kicked in.
I got plenty for the series. Yeah.
All right.
Can't have too many.
Apparently not. Can't have too many division titles. That's what the Braves' motto generally is. All right.
Oh, no.
Dr. Snyder, we're going to talk about AC joints today. Okay. And that's an injury. You tell us, what does that injury entail, an AC joint injury?
So, you know, this injury often gets confused on, you know, the announcers on a game will say, that, you know, the athlete has separated their shoulder. Now, that's different from a dislocation. What they're speaking of is the acromioclavicular joint, kind of the joint at the top of the shoulder where the clavicle comes in and joins the rest of the shoulder. You know, there's a joint there, and that can be separated. There's a capsule, and then there's kind of ligaments that are associated with that. And now, obviously, the higher the grade of injury, you know, the more serious it is. And the real problem comes in is when you've got, a grade 3 versus a grade 5. And, you know, some of these lower grades, the players can come back and play relatively quickly. For the higher grades, they need to be out a while and even consider surgery at that point.
How prevalent or non-prevalent is this among weekend warrior-type athletes, the AC joint injury?
Yeah, so they're very common. We see a lot in mountain bikers. There's actually quite a big mountain bike community here, and we'll see a lot, you know, in kind of the weekend warriors that are surfing or they fall on the pickleball court or so forth. It's a fall landing directly on the shoulder itself. That's usually what's caused.
So for mountain bikers, it's not like the general drumbeat of the, you know, the handlebars vibrating in your hands, right? It's if they take a
toe. No, it's usually a traumatic fall right on the shoulder.
So the best prevention for this is don't fall on the shoulder, I'm taking it, right?
That's right. Be a great mountain biker.
So
no.
I would, right? Stay on the bike. Stay on the what are we talking about in terms of you know, like like an average AC joint injury if you are a weekend warrior, how long till you're back in the game?
So most of them are grade one and twos, and so those are, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks you can get back to your activity. You know, for the higher grades, that's what you're talking about, having surgery and so forth.
Gotcha. All right. Well, you know what? As always, be as prepared as possible. And just because you think pickleball is not a contact sport, be careful. You know, have the proper footwear and don't slip and you know, stay upright. That's always that's my big thing. My wife and I now, I don't want to fall. You know what I mean? Like,
falling's an issue.
You get past a certain age, and the things you used to be able to do and absorb are not quite as easy to take. But you know what? If you do have that injury, Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute can get you straightened out. JOI is the official sports medicine providers for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Dr. Lance Snyder and the crew do a great job keeping them up and rolling as healthy as possible. Dr. Snyder, enjoy rooting against the trash can cheaters, and we'll look forward to catching up with you in a week's time.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Take care.
Man. There he goes, Dr. Lance Snyder with your JOI injury outlook.
Now, the question of the day, driven by Maserati Jacksonville. Come experience uncompromising luxury at Maserati Jacksonville.
All right, here we go. Question of the day, brought to you by Maserati Jacksonville. Which of these pass catchers will have the biggest positive impact for the Jags in the final 11 games of the season? Agnew, Arnold, Jones, and Chenault. And we phrased it that way because it didn't want to just make it who's going to have the most receptions or yardage. Positive impact could mean a lot of different things, John. Out of those choices, Agnew, Jones, and Chenault in the receiver core, Dan Arnold, the tight end, who will have the biggest positive impact for the Jags over the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I think Jones is going to have the most receptions, but in interest of answering your question, I'll say Arnold because I think his presence will open things up. I don't think they're going to have a deep guy that is enough of a deep guy to help everybody out significantly. So I'll go with Arnold for his ability to maybe draw the eyes of the defense his way and open things up for the wide receivers.
E.T., what do you say?
I think it's going to be Jones. I think Chenault will probably have, like, bigger plays, maybe. But Jones is going to catch more touchdowns, and that's most impactful to me overall. So I think it's going to be Jones.
All right, Tony?
I agree with Denny, who, when he answered the question earlier today, mentioned Marvin Jones as his answer. And I think he needs to be, you know, the guy that Trevor Lawrence develops that chemistry with. We've already seen it a little bit to this point this season, but I think he has the potential to be the most consistent factor in the Jaguars passing game and needs to continue to develop as that guy over the course of the rest of the year.
All right, I'm going to go with for the drama's sake here and tie this up. I'm going to go with Dan Arnold along with John because I do think, you know, like week to week, I do think Marvin Jones probably ends up with the biggest numbers mm-hmm. out of any of these guys and any other options on this football team. But Dan Arnold is the guy. He's it at the tight end position right now in terms of a pass-catching factor or a potential pass-catching factor. He's got to hang on to the football. Had a couple of drops now in the last couple of outings. So, you know, hang on to the football and, you know, make a positive impact. But I think he will ultimately be a guy that we're going to see some of those 6, 7, even 8 catch games. You know, he probably won't put up the yardage totals of Marvin Jones and LaVisca Chenault. But here's what the voting looks like. Over 300 votes in on this one. Marvin Jones Jr. with 35% of the vote right now. 29.5 going to Dan Arnold. 22.1 for Jamal Agnew. And everybody's favorite guy, LaVisca Chenault. And I say that seriously, like people love coming it. Into this year like, oh my God, this guy, what do you see? It's going to be a huge breakout. And it's like, what do they need to do, John? He got 13.3% right now. Can they manufacture more touches for him going forward, in your opinion?
I think it's difficult without that speed guy over mm-hmm. the top because it's easy to compress the defense against this wide receiver core right now, which makes it a little more difficult for LaVisca. I think you've seen him try it. I think you'll see bubble screens. You'll see things with him out of the backfield. You get creative.
You think we'll see more of him lining up in the backfield? Or I mean, because I know they've tried to treat him strictly as a wide receiver.
What about
this point.
More? You might see him probably try to keep it about the same level. I think it'll be hard. I think they have wanted to try. I think there's a limit to how much you can do that. I think it's going to be up to him to break some tackles the line of scrimmage, and that's not always easy.
All right. With that, let's welcome in XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit TireOutlet.com/careers, equal opportunity employer.
All right, Big Sirs is in the house. Good morning,
What's
Leon.
What's going on, gentlemen? How you doing?
We're doing well. How are you?
I'm doing
everything good?
Yep.
Question of the day we asked today, which of these pass catchers will have the biggest positive impact? Doesn't mean necessarily the biggest stats. Biggest positive impact for the Jags over the final 11 games. Is it Jamal Agnew, Dan Arnold, Marvin Jones Jr., or LaVisca Chenault? How would you vote for that?
I'm going to go with Chenault. I'll go with LaVisca.
Really? Okay,
I'll
how come?
I'll go with LaVisca Chenault. They got to find ways to utilize him. And just what Johnny O was talking about, the reason why he hasn't been as productive for the last couple of games because there's no one that can stretch the field. And the defense is like John was saying, compresses where you can't get him on bubble screens, you can't get him on quick slants and all that kind of stuff. You can't get him on maybe end of rounds, reverses and all that kind of stuff because you have no real threat downfield or even a tight end in the middle where you can open up lanes for him. So, and hopefully we can do that. We can get some guys out there that can stretch the defense a little bit where we can get Chenault more touches. You saw in the one game where he did get a touch, later on in the game he made something happen.
Yeah, he doesn't need to beat you 40 yards down the field. He can beat you short,
yes.
Truck a guy.
And I love his toughness. I love his toughness. Absolutely, I love his toughness.
He's the hardest wide receiver in the league to tackle one-on-one. I really believe that, from what I've seen. If there's another one that's anywhere in that category, I'd like to see. I'm not saying it's easy to tackle DK Metcalf. There's some physical specimens, but he just has an unwillingness to go down that's fun to watch.
Yeah, that's good while you're young because you don't know any better.
Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce will teach you a clinic.
As you get older, he'll learn to go out of bounds and get down.
Yeah, Torrey Holt's a good dude. He does a lot of radio on Sirius XM, and I've given him grief over the years. So like, man, you never met an opportunity to duck that you didn't take.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Got my 15.
You got
that's
it
good. Let me get down right here.
That's how you do it.
All right, what do you have coming up, Leon?
At 1, we got Feinbaum at 1 o'clock, and then we got the Major Wright at 1.
All right, good stuff as we lead towards Florida, Georgia, Georgia, Florida, coming up this weekend. Thank you, sirs.
Right,
have
brother.
A good show. XL Primetime coming your way with Joe C. Hacker and Matt Hayes joining Leon Searcy. Johnny O., where will we catch your many offerings over the next few days?
The return this week, the ballyhooed return of the Huddle Up podcast with Bucky Brooks is what I'm excited about.
My life was incomplete during the bye week.
It was a tough week.
It was a tough week for all of us, really.
Yeah, it was. And then we'll have our normal coverage on Jaguars.com, but Huddle Up with Bucky Brooks and myself is always a good show at 4:30 on Wednesdays.
All right, there you go. Check that out today. And, of course, Johnny O. Mailbag and everything else he's got going on at Jaguars.com. And you can catch him every Wednesday here on the program. John, we'll talk to you during the pregame show.
Look forward to
coming
it.
Coming up on
Thank
Sunday.
You guys.
You'd be the one who did it. All right, over 300 votes in. Still time for you to get in. If you haven't, tell us which of those pass catchers we've been talking about today will have the biggest positive impact for the Jags in the final 11 games, and we will recap that tomorrow when D-Rock brings us some delicious, delicious.
Ooh.
I don't even know if it'll be nutritious, but it'll be delicious.
It'll be breakfast. Delicious, though.
It will. ET 207-7071. The call-in line, you want folks to leave you a message and tell you what exactly.
Has your expectations changed, and if so, what are they now?
All right.
Holla at your boy.
So are your expectations still on track, and if you've adjusted them, what are they going forward the rest of the season?
Say it with your chest, though.
Do it, or else you're not going to make the program. Come on, somebody. Come on, everybody. An opening segment feature on the Jaguar Radio pregame. Tony, what do you got tonight? Anything?
We got Max Fried on the hill for the Braves tonight.
Oh, they're playing tonight?
And an even bigger game for Max, considering Charlie Morton obviously out for the series. So Braves down one of their starting pitchers. It becomes Max, who's been one of the best pitchers in the National League over the second half of the season. We need him tonight, no doubt.
I would wish you luck, but I'd be lying. So that's just no good outcome for me here.
Is this a seven-game series?
Yes.
It could be, okay. Potentially, yes. Old school, then go best of nine. That's what they used to do way back in the turn of the 20th
That's how
century.
It worked, yeah.
The very early days. You could go nine. What else did they have to do, man? Right? I mean, come on.
And you only played the World Series. You didn't have the playoffs.
Right, there
are
no playoffs. So it was just best of nine between the two leagues. So anyway, that's that. And enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. We appreciate you tuning in to Jaguars today. We'll be back tomorrow with Mike DiRocco of ESPN. Friday with Tom McManus, getting you ready for Jags and Seahawks. For Tony Smith, for E.T., for Donovan Darius, John Osier, Danny Thompson and Dr. Lance Snyder. I'm Mike Dempsey. Thank you for listening to the Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And I got one more thing to say.